It's the Marketplace Tech Podcast for Wednesday, December 11th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. Today, the World Health Organization releases its annual report on malaria. The disease kills some 600,000 people every year, most of them in sub-Saharan Africa. Part of fighting any disease is understanding how populations move. And there's a tech device now being used to tackle this challenge. It's called a cell phone. An epidemiologist at Harvard named Caroline Buckey has been looking at massive amounts of cell phone data. Think phone calls and texts of 15 million cell phone users in Kenya, for instance, with their phone locations triangulated by the phone company.
So we combine that human mobility model with clinical information about the malaria parasite, and we use mathematical models to predict how people are going to spread it when they travel.
Think of plotting malaria cases on a map and then overlaying data showing where people are moving and making better predictions about where the disease might go next. Dr. Buckey points out that this data is thoroughly anonymized, by the way, so scientists don't know who is moving. They just see a bunch of dots. Still, there are challenges.
The challenges are the very poorest populations, and that the density of cell towers determines how high a resolution you can get your estimates. So in some of the most rural and underserved populations, we have the hardest time.
The penetration of cell phones in the region is impressive, though, and Buckey hopes those phones could someday warn people of an outbreak. Marketplace is a nonprofit, listener-supported service. To keep our coverage strong and relevant, please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Your gift in any amount helps us keep you up to date and well-informed wherever you are. Donate at marketplace.org by December 31st. This week, Congress debated questions about gun technology, particularly the difference between, say, a plastic firearm that a metal detector can't see and the 3D printed guns with maybe some metal parts that companies like Texas firm Defense Distributed are making. We asked tech critic Molly Wood to break it all down for us.
So what happened is that Congress and then the president signed into law a 10-year extension on a ban on plastic guns.
Okay.
So it says undetectable firearms are against the law. You cannot create a gun that is made 100% out of plastic that could be, you know, undetectable by a metal detector. But there's this sort of weird loophole situation where, okay, sure, I could 3D print a gun at my house, and as long as I put a tiny piece of metal in it, it's technically legal.
I mean, this is something that we keep bumping up against, whether we're talking guns or drones or insert technological innovation area here. Are we going to actually have to hack a solution to the way the U.S. government works just to deal with the speed of technological innovation?
I think that's an optimistic way to put it. I would like to believe that we could hack together a solution, but I think we're going to go through a period of some discomfort. There is no question that technology is moving way faster than the law.
Is there anything else about this story that you find interesting, especially regarding this news this week?
I think the NRA's silence is interesting. I think the gun industry has yet to make a stand either way on this technology, because I think everybody realizes that on the one hand, it is absolutely terrifying.
But it could also be really disruptive to the massive industry that lives right behind the NRA.
Exactly. The unintended consequences of technology are always what fascinate me. And so if that technology becomes freely available and the economics of the gun industry collapse, then all of a sudden you have a different landscape on a couple of different levels.
Molly Wood, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Google Glass. It's been praised and pilloried, but the company's big bid for wearable tech is starting to offer up some pretty interesting experiments these days. I just watched a stop-motion video made from 4 days of photos taken by Glass, but a doctor just finished wearing the techie spectacles in the operating room for 3 months. Pierre Theodore is a surgeon at the University of California's Medical Center. Dr. Theodore, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for the invitation.
Can you give me a specific example of something that you would have had to use an analog for in the operating room that has changed or can change with someone who's wearing Google Glass?
One of the things that oncology surgeons frequently have to encounter is trying to remove a lesion or a tumor that's embedded deeply within an organ. To have the additional images projected into the visual field while the surgeon is operating can allow the surgeon to basically kind of have a cognitive switch between operating on the organ itself and then seeing the images that are actually guiding the therapy.
Is there an app that you're waiting with bated breath for that could really change the game for you?
So there are a couple functional elements that are absolutely necessary in my early experience with the Google Glass. And one is voice commands, for example, that allow the surgeon to switch among various images and choose specific images without having to actually touch the glass. And in addition to this, being able to control the magnification of the image is also very important. So the resolution is exactly what the surgeon would anticipate in order to guide the thought processes in the operating room.
Dr. Pierre Theodore focuses on lung surgery and is an associate professor at the University of California, San Francisco's Medical Center. Dr. Theodore, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
And before we go today, one more thing on phones. There's an old school one that was found in Peru and is currently stored in Maryland by the National Museum of the American Indian. No brand, but it was made from twine and a couple of gourds. You could call it a first generation. Its age? 1,200 years old. I'll be thinking on that next time I start complaining about waiting to upgrade. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.